The following is a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio. From hot dogs to cool kitties, this is Dark Side of the Pooch.
Dr. Rab, what you got, baby? That's what I'm talking about. It is Dark Side of the Pooch. You can hear this show every Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday at 7 o'clock every single night, 7 o'clock Central on Tony Curry Radio. Thanks to the thousands of folks who have found us. And, of course, also wherever you get your podcast, Tony Curry Radio Podcast. Tony Curry Radio Podcast or TKR, Curry with a K. Just search Tony Curry Radio Podcast. We're on every major podcast platform out there. And listen to Dark Side of the Pooch with Dr. Rab Stewart and the Ross Bridge Animal Hospital. Ross Bridge Vet at... On, of course, also the Ross Bridge Animal Hospital on Facebook. Fantastic. Brought to you by Ed's Pet World down there in Hoover. Actually, in Homewood, but you can go to the Hoover location, and they'll tell you about Ed's Pet World. They do fantastic work down there in beautiful Homewood. They've redone the streets. They've been in business for almost 50 years. Exotic pets. I just went down there and got me an iridescent shark last week. It's fantastic. Seth and Angie and the entire crew are looking for you. They've got every exotic pet you're looking for, including chinchillas. They got a brand new cockatoo, which I posted a couple days ago. The thing sat on my shoulder and talked to me for about 10 or 15 minutes. Unbelievable animals. And of course, he also does lots of toys too. About a 50-50 shot now, wherever you go. He's finding toys still packaged up, vintage toys, all-star stuff, Star Wars stuff, you name it. He's got it all covered up. If you find some toys in your attic, go down there and buy, sell, and trade with Ed's Pet World. How you been, man? What's been going on? Starting to cool off a little bit. Have your pooches got the dog crazies yet?
My pooches always have the dog crazies. But I recently saw a band who has an animal name, Dinosaur Jr., and so if I keep saying huh, what, and come again, it's because I'm still deaf from that show.
Dinosaur Jr., where was that show at?
It was at Saturn.
Really? And it was good, huh?
It was good. They were supposed to be there in 2020, and they finally made it this year.
Good.
And it was good. It was worth the wait. It was a packed house at Saturn.
I have never heard of Dinosaur Jr. What kind of music they play? Is it kind of a jam band?
No, it's really, it's heavy stuff. You've heard some of their songs.
Yeah.
One of them's Feel the Pain.
Oh,
it
yeah.
was real popular in like the early, like kind of mid-90s, kind of grunge scene.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there. If anybody out there's heard of another similar band, Pavement.
Yeah.
Or Stephen Malkmus. They're kind of like a little bit same vein there.
All right, excellent. Well, I'll speak extra loud for you. I thought it was just because you were old, but I will speak extra loud for you.
Both.
Hey, we have not done a show since the Queen passed, and I know that she was a huge corgi person. Any thoughts on the Queen and the fact that she had a corgi in her life at some point? They overlapped from 1933 to 2018. So for 85 years, she had some type of corgi, and her first corgi's name was?
William.
No, actually, it was Dookie. Dookie, just like, kind of like the Duke. So she got her first corgi when she was like 10 years old, and she loved corgis. And, of course, she also bred corgis. And I was trying to do a little research to find out if corgis is a royal type of animal. It's not. It's just that she just really liked corgis. From that point on, she had no other dog but corgis her entire life. She had four corgis when they passed away. Two of those will live with William, and they haven't decided what they're going to do with the other two yet. But any thoughts on the Queen or the fact that she loved animals so much?
I mean, I think my initial thought would be, out of all of these corgis that she owned, I'm curious if they were all the same lineage. I would be really interested to know, like, if she had the same gene line from mm-hmm. that first one all the way up until the ones that she has now. And corgis do seem to me a little bit uppity.
Yeah.
They're a little uppity, and I would imagine that the royal family is a little uppity.
Mm-hmm.
So it was probably a really good match.
You're probably right. You may be onto something. When you think about royalty, you think about, I think about maybe a Great Dane, just because of its stature and the fact that it's a large animal. But yeah, I could think of a corgi as certainly a royal animal, but she will sorely be missed, and of course her animals will be taken care of. This is Dark Side of the Pooch. You're here every Monday through Friday, 7 p.m. and wherever you get your podcast. Info at TonyCurryRadio.net. A very important info at TonyCurryRadio.net. All your email questions will be coming your way. Before we get into those mutt mails, though, Dr. Rab Stewart from the Rossburg Animal Hospital, 208-0301, by the way, 208-0301. Saw this really interesting story, and I may be totally throwing a blank here, but I think it's really interesting. Because of climate control, our beaches, not only the water's getting higher and warmer, but our beaches are getting warmer. Does that make sense? Because the sun's beating down on it?
Oh, yeah.
And do you know what that affects?
It affects dogs in some strange way.
It does, but it also affects our sea turtles. And I did not realize this because they say hot chicks and cool daddies. If the temperature of the sand is 88.8 degrees or warmer, turtles give birth to females. That's it. At 88.8 degrees, it must be a female. Anything at 81.86 degrees or chillier, cooler, it is a male. And anything in between those temperatures, it could be a mixture of both. And so what's happening, and certainly the last couple of years, because of the climate control and because of the warmth of the sand, almost every turtle in the last couple of years born has been a female. And they're now talking about, we're going to have a problem because you would have to have daddy turtles in order to procreate, continue these turtles out there. It's kind of interesting, right?
Well, that's amazing. Like, I mean, I learned something today.
There you go.
That's, I mean, that's just mind blowing.
Isn't it crazy?
I would just assume that it would be totally random,
mm-hmm.
you know, because of the fertilization and the sperm and the egg. And that's mind blowing.
Isn't that crazy? So there's a couple of ways to go about this. They can either go in and dig up the eggs they have and try to bury them lower, so the sand is cooler, which is probably not going to work, obviously. They got to figure out a way to procreate male turtles and get them back into the situation in order to have more sea turtles, because there's plenty of sea turtles now. They've done a great job. If you've ever been down to the beach and you've seen these little cascading little areas where their fences up and stuff, and stay away from these areas, and seeing sea turtles obviously is really, really cool down the beach, but certainly at that temperature. My question to you is are there any temperature variations that have anything to do with anything when it comes to dogs or cats? Do cats and dogs have the same temperature? Do males and females differentiate temperature? If based on the warmth or the cold or the cold temperature, the any variations of temperatures, does it mean anything in the pet world?
I have some temperature facts for you.
Okay.
First, I have to comment on, can you imagine if you were the male turtle that was tasked to save the entire turtle population?
I mean,
and Mr. Turtle, like you are going to have to really step up your game here, and we're going to have you fertilize thousands of eggs.
And then the crazy thing about this, though, is you could fertilize thousands of eggs, but if they're all going to be turning out female, I mean, it's great to have a bunch of female turtles, but you're never going to continue the species unless you have more males. So that you really have to kind of nip it in the bud and find a way to get more guys out there.
That's right. At some point, you got to figure out how to birth the boys.
But yes, you and I could be a couple male turtles during spring break one year. Yes.
I don't know, but Ninja Turtles.
Yes.
The most interesting temperature fact I can give you when it comes to pets is, When a female is very close to having her puppies, her temperature will drop 1 degree.
Okay.
And it's super consistent. So if you are wondering if your female dog is getting close to having her puppies, you have to take her temperature every day, which, you know, is probably not the most fun thing to do. Mm-hmm. But once you can get a 1 degree drop, that can give you some insight as to those puppies are coming.
And what is that standard temperature for a female?
So that's the tricky part, because dogs and cats, their range varies over several degrees.
Okay.
So the top end of normal is considered to be 102.5, but it can get a little bit higher if dogs and cats are really active or if they're stressed. And then, you know, 99.5 is considered the bottom end, but it can be a little bit lower if they're cold. or if they haven't been moving much. So, you know, that little tidbit of the 1 degree temperature drop, it's only going to work if they kind of maintain that constant temperature and they're not one of these pets whose temperature bounces around. But if you're doing it at home and they're at rest and you're keeping it kind of consistent when you do it, then they're probably going to have a very similar temperature. And so once you get that 1 degree drop, it's getting close to puppy time.
And you stick the thermometer under their armpit, correct?
No, it's under their tongue.
Yeah, I have a feeling it goes. You know what they say? You know the difference between a regular thermometer and a rectal thermometer, and that's the taste. That's the biggest difference. So let me ask you this, because this is interesting. Do dogs and cats get fevers?
Yeah. I mean, that's why we take their temperature, and their fevers can get a lot higher than what we would usually get. You know, if a dog or cat has a real fever, and then this is just kind of the lowest we would consider a fever is 103.5.
Okay.
That would be like us having like a 99 degree fever.
Okay.
So when people come in, it's really, people say, oh, what's my pet's temperature? We tell them if it's a normal temperature, they immediately think their pet's sick. And then if they do have a fever and we tell them, they immediately think they're going to die,
yep.
You know, because your pet has a fever, it's 104.5. And, you know, people just get really upset by that. But, you know, I've seen dogs and cats get up as high as 106. And when they get to be 106, they're pretty sick, you know.
That's typical like a human being. Obviously, the body's trying to fight off some type of infection or something.
Yeah, exactly. There's inflammation going on in the body. That raises the temperature, and the inflammation is there because they're trying to fix something.
Can you feel, I know I can feel a difference in my son and my daughter, not even through their forehead. I mean, sometimes when they're just up against you can feel the hotness of their skin. Is it like that with a dog or a cat?
You can feel it, but you have to be careful, because since dogs and cats, they run hotter than we do almost all the time.
Yeah.
When you touch them, they're always going to feel warm to you.
Yeah.
So, you know, you can be kind of fooled into thinking that they have a fever, whereas most people are 98.6.
Mm-hmm.
So if you touch somebody and they're warmer than you, you can assume they have a fever, but you can't do that in pets. Dogs and cats can't.
Dark Side of the Pooch with Dr. Rab Stewart, the Rossbridge Animal Hospital. Super busy man. Always has time for Tony Curry here on Tony Curry Radio and Dark Side of the Pooch. We do the show every single week. Fresh new shows. It airs at 7 o'clock. Perfect right after dinner to listen to some great pet news. We have some funny stories we do as well right here with Dr. Rab. His number is 205-208-0301 at Rossbridge Vet on Twitter, the Rossbridge Animal Hospital on Facebook. And, of course, you can also go to info@tonycurryradio.net if you have any questions or emails for us. And find us on your favorite podcast platform. We have, I would probably say 70 or 80 different shows you could listen to, and every one of them is different, so it's great. We got some mutt mail for you, and this is perfect question because I guess it was last Friday night, Frisco, my Havanese, got out of the house. It started to storm, and normally when it storms, he acts kind of strange, and I gave him some of the anxiety medicine that you gave me, and he must have slipped out underneath my feet. I didn't even realize it, so I go back in the house. I realize he's not there. I'm looking behind the toilet. I'm looking in the tub, all the places he usually hides. I can't find him, and so I go searching the neighborhood, and I'm driving around probably for about 2 days. I mean, that's what it felt like. And I know my kids are coming over, and so I was trying to do everything I could to find him, and I could not find him. And it was just a rarity, because usually he just hangs out in the middle of the street or off the side of the road. He usually hops back in the car. Come to find out, and he came back about 6 hours later, he was underneath our deck, which makes sense because of the rain. But, and you've got a dog that does this too, that runs away, it hurts your feelings. And I swear, it seems like my dogs run away more when I've just had a tiff with them. Like if I've just yelled at them or something, it's like they're letting me know that they didn't like that and they run away. It seems like there's always some type of collaborative situation there. But I know a lot of people have animals. They take care of their dogs. They love their dogs. They feed their dogs. They treat them well, yet they continually run away. And it hurts your feelings as an owner. Why do dogs do that? Or do they know what they're doing?
I think they know what they're doing. I don't think there's anything malicious to it, but they know that they're taking off for whatever reason that is. If they just want to go explore, or they want to find the opposite sex, or, you know, whatever. So I don't think they do it to hurt anybody's feelings.
Yeah.
It just makes me really mad because I have to take time out of my day to go and look for this dog that just wants to run away. Yep. And he's always done that. And, you know, if anything, if I was responsible, it's kind of like you said, your kids were coming over and you needed to find the dog. If anything ever happened to my dog because I let it out, then I would have to sleep outside forever until I died.
I hear you.
Because my wife and my kids love the dog more than they love me.
You know what? According to our survey we did a couple of weeks ago, you're absolutely correct. A lot of people love their animals more than they love the humans in their life. It's just, I'm the same way, because I thought, man, I hadn't seen my kids in a week and they're going to be coming over here. And if I don't get that dog back, the first thing you think of is like letting your child run outside and not keep an eye on them. They think, what did you do? Why did you let the dog out and not keep an eye on that animal? And I'm like, and of course my dog's like a monkey. I've got a fence, but he can climb a 5-foot fence with his little claws. He jumps over and It drives me crazy. That question, by the way, came from Pete in New Orleans. He has a dog that keeps running away, and he's at the point where he's like, I don't look anymore, because it does take him like 1 or 2 hours. I ran into a bunch of people in my neighborhood. I'm like, have you seen my little black Havanese? And they're like, no. And so I just hope that I go back home and he's either sitting on my front porch or he'll come home on his own. You just don't want him getting hit. Or I actually thought someone stole him, which we live in a pretty decent neighborhood. But he's small enough. And I thought to myself, I think someone picked him up and ran off, because it was like he just disappeared. It was crazy. All right. Stacy in Birmingham. She said recently her cat is doing something strange with her paws. She just scratches the driveway, the concrete driveway, with her two front paws. What is she doing?
She might be itchy, her paws might be itchy, or she might be filing down her nails. Would be the first two things that I would think. So I would check the nails and just be sure they're not too long or broken, and be sure that the paws aren't red and irritated. And if there's not any abnormal nail and the paws aren't red or scratched up, then I wouldn't spend another minute worrying about it.
Okay. But there's nothing with the actual pad of the paws that they're doing. Is there something do they like those to be scratchy? Are they maybe wiping that on the concrete to make those more scratchy, or is it primarily had to do with their claws?
No, I don't think it's trying to do anything with its paw pads. I would say that it either has itchy feet, and even if the pet has itchy feet and the feet aren't, red and have a lot of debris in between the pads and the toes, then it's nothing to worry about. And just be sure that the nails aren't cracked, or be sure there's no kind of discharge around the nail. And if everything looks fine, then I can't tell you why after that, but I would tell you it's something to worry about.
Growing up, it always felt good when I was young and I had stinky, scratchy feet to rub it on the carpet, the shag carpet. It felt pretty good.
Yeah, that maybe that's why my dog runs away, because I put my stinky feet in his face.
Maybe that's it. Dr. Rab Stewart, the Rossbridge Animal Hospital, at Rossbridge Vet on Twitter, the Rossbridge Animal Hospital on Facebook, info@TonyCurryRadio.net. Will in Nashville said, has there been any good research on the attributes of CBD products on our pets? And he went on to say, as far as in marijuana too. So maybe the THC aspect of it. I know there's a lot of different research out there that has not been done on human beings. Obviously, more than half the states now have some type of properties where you can smoke it or use CBD products, whether it be medicinal or recreational. Anything on our pets?
They have. It's been proven that CBD can help with joint pain sometimes. Mm-hmm. At a 2 milligram per kilogram dose. All of the other uses, so for anxiety, that's a big one. That kind of stuff has not really been proven yet and written up. But the anti-inflammatory property, that has been documented at that dose.
And I wonder if it works, because I know a lot of humans that are suffering through some type of cancer diagnosis use it for their appetite. I wonder if that's true for animals. There's got to be some type of research that dogs are looking for Twinkies after they smoke a bowl, right?
Well, when you get into the THC thing, dogs don't exactly have the same side effects after that. So if they get into THC, it a lot of times does the opposite of dogs. It really makes them hypersensitive.
Really?
It doesn't relax them at all. It makes them really jumpy. So I guess, you know, that's not something that, I have in my daily routine. Not something I've really had a lot of experience with, but, you know, some people get real paranoid on it, and maybe that's how dogs react with it. Maybe it just makes them all paranoid, but it makes them very hypersensitive to other stimuli, so that they, you know, they're jumping around. They're very anxious. They're looking around, you know, moving really haphazardly. So, I don't know that it would have those, you know, I don't know if it would be an appetite stimulant, because it affects them differently than it does people.
There you go. Info@TonyCurryRadio.net. Info@TonyCurryRadio.net. If you get your email questions, bring them on. We'll read as many as we possibly can. And, of course, we do a lot of emails, mutt mail here on Dark Side of the Pooch. You can find us on any of your social media platforms, not to mention, of course, podcast platforms. We're on all of them. So search Tony Curry Radio. It's Curry with a K. And it's brought to you by Ed's Pet World. Fantastic business people down there. They've got some wonderful animals, including a brand new cockatoo, which is just super cool to see it down there. Exotic pets, chinchillas, ferrets, bearded dragons, wonderful fish. I got an iridescent shark last week. Fantastic stuff. Plus all kinds of toys from Seth. They buy, sell, and trade all that stuff. Vintage toys, Star Wars stuff, and more. So check it out. Chelsea in New York City. Has written that she has had allergy issues her entire life based on pets, but she loves dogs. And she was told by a breeder that she found a hypoallergenic dog. She's been told by her vet they don't exist. Short hair, long hair, whatever, all dogs give you allergies at some extent. She said, is that true or not? And what's the best breed to get if she is allergic to dogs or their fur?
Well, I think that there are definitely breeds that if they don't shed as much as other dogs, then they may be more allergy friendly. So everyone always says, you know, doodles, they don't shed a lot, which they don't. That's true. Havanese don't really shed a whole lot either.
No, not at all.
Breeds that shed a lot are, you know, labs or any type of dog that has that medium length hair. Those dogs shed like crazy. The thing about allergies and pets, and you know, I'm not allergic to dogs or cats, but I am allergic to pollen.
Yeah.
And the thing that gets a lot of people, so they may not be necessarily allergic to the dog or cat, but what they are allergic to are things outside. So if you have a dog that goes outside and runs around in the grass, runs through the weeds, they're going to bring that stuff inside. And then that's going to cause you problems. And that's what causes me problems in the fall and the spring, when we start seeing dogs that, you know, spend a lot of time outside and they come in with that stuff on their body. Mm-hmm. So, you know, if you have allergies, you just because you get a dog that doesn't shed and it's supposed to be hypoallergenic, you know, maybe to some degree it is. But if you have outdoor allergies, you still need to take that into account.
All right, there you go. And it's weird because I'm actually, I hate to use the word allergic. I mean, it doesn't make me puff up. It just makes my nose run. And of course, you've seen my nose. Chili makes my nose run. Everything makes my nose run. But cats, you know, if I'm around a cat for a little while, it'll start knocking me out. Dogs, not so much. So obviously the fur is a little different. Jan in Jackson.
Well, give you please. An interesting thing with cats. So most people, when they're allergic to cats, they're allergic to the saliva of the cat. So cats are always grooming themselves and people are allergic to the saliva.
Really?
And there is new technology, and I have not had any personal experience with this, but there is new technology in cat foods that alters the allergens in their saliva. And that is supposed to make people less allergic to the cat saliva that's on their skin. It's pretty amazing if it works, but I don't have any experience with it yet.
That news is almost as crazy as a sea turtle crazy. So what is in their saliva that makes us allergic to them or to it?
Yeah, you know, it's some kind of protein, I'm sure. I mean, I can't tell you exactly what it is. I just know that when you are allergic to cats, you are mostly allergic to the saliva that they put on their skin from grooming.
That is incredible. Info@TonyCurryRadio.net. Your email questions here. Dark Side of the Pooch, 7 o'clock every Monday through Friday, wherever you get your podcast. Jan in Jackson, Mississippi writes, and it's a long letter, so I'm just going to kind of paraphrase. She said, obviously, they've got a lot of water issues over there. She said, obviously, we're concerned for our own consumption of the water in and around Jackson, Mississippi. But what about animals? She wants to know, what can my dogs drink? Can my dogs drink tap water that's not safe for human beings? She's seen dogs drink out of ponds and creeks and on the side of the road. What kind of water can animals drink, and is every type of water safe as long as it doesn't have something in it?
They can get pathogens just like we can from drinking standing water or stagnant water, bad water, but they're a lot more resistant than we are. So mm-hmm. That's why you see a dog, can drink out of a pond or a lake,
toilet,
or a puddle and not have any problems. But they can get things like Giardia and Coccidia and, of course, intestinal parasites. And we can get those things too. But dogs are a little more hardy. I would say that I would err on the side of caution, though. And if the water isn't potable for a person, then I would attempt to not feed that or give that water to my pet. If I absolutely had to, then you have to. Dogs are more resistant than people.
Okay. Steve in Gainesville wants to know, if cats have 9 lives, how many lives do dogs have, Dr. Rabb? that's a great question. It really is.
Yeah, that's a good question. I think dogs have 4. I think they have almost half of what a cat has.
Really?
Because I think that my dog should have died 3 times. So he's got 1 more. So we're trying to be very cautious with him. I think on average, dogs have 4 lives, because I think that they are half as smart as cats. So it makes sense that they would have half as many lives.
All right. Finally, I saw this one last story, and I'll let you get back to work here. This story of a dog in New Jersey. I don't know if you saw this. It came out yesterday. Beloved dog dies after fight with what in its backyard?
A rooster.
A porcupine. I didn't know they had porcupines up in New Jersey, so that was kind of a rarity, rare strange. But, I mean, this poor dog has got quills all over its face, and obviously it was enough to kill this animal.
And it died?
Yeah, it did. It sure did. What was the incredible journey with the dog that got bit by the porcupine, the one that was played by Michael J. Fox, and they got the quills, and they had to pull the quills out of its face? I don't think we have porcupines down here in the South, but what other animals outside I'll say a nasty bite will be included, but outside something where it gives it rabies or something, like what other kind of animals, like a badger, if your dog gets in touch with a possum or a groundhog, a hawk, are there other types of animals, depending on the size of your dog, that you should be aware of it messing with? Snakes obviously are dangerous.
Yeah, probably the most common things that we see are snakes and wild dogs. That's what we see here. I don't think, I'm racking my brain, and I don't think I've ever had a serious injury that I've treated. Not including bites from dogs and cats. See that all the time. I'm talking like things that are outside the domestic realm. It seems to be almost always wild dog. And most of the time, those are just suspected. I don't think I've ever had a client that has said, I saw my dog get attacked by a coyote, or I saw my cat get attacked by a coyote. And it's also rare that an owner will see a dog get bitten by a snake. We can suspect it, and we see a bunch of those cases a year. But it's really rare that you see your pet get attacked by a wild animal.
Yeah. And maybe it is, but it's only used one of its lives, and it's got 4, right? So maybe it's just don't see it. There you have it.
Exactly. We see the effects of it. We see the dog come in, and we can suspect that it's a snake bite. But actually seeing the snake bite the dog, that's a rarity.
Yeah, it is. And I've had 3 instances where my dogs have been bitten by poisonous snakes. And I only know they're poisonous because you can actually see the fang marks, the holes in and around their face. And it you'll know right away that your animal's been bitten. And it's the strangest behavior by our dogs when they get so still. They'll just stand there and they won't move. It's the, and obviously they're drooling and sometimes they're bleeding a little bit, but they'll just stand there. They will not move. It's the most bizarre thing. They look like statues. I don't know if that's normal or whether their body's being shocked by the venom, or do you know?
I think they're probably just being very cautious.
Yeah.
You know, and dogs, you know, a lot of times we project that, oh, we know that that is a snake.
Yeah.
And we know what it can do. Dogs have no clue.
Yeah.
You know, they have no clue what that thing is, and they don't really know where it came from or where it's going. So a lot of times I think that their instincts have taken over, and they know that if they're still, they have they're less likely to have another issue. So they're just going to kind of wait and hold their ground until they know they're safe, and then they'll move.
I used to be like that when I came in at 3 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah. You better go very slowly.
I would just stay at the front door and not move and hope that no one saw me for a few minutes so I could make it to the bathroom and go back to bed. That is Dark Side of the Pooch. Great show. We do it every single week, 7 o'clock, Monday through Friday, wherever you get your podcast. Check out Dark Side of the Pooch on Tony Curry Radio. That's Curry with a K, TKR. And, of course, Rossbridge Animal Hospital, 205-208-0301. If you're looking for anyone to watch your animal for a period of time, maybe when you're on a vacation, please call them early. They're always booked up. They're always slammed. It's one of the best. And, of course, Rossbridge Vet on Twitter and Rossbridge Animal Hospital on Facebook. And we thank our fine folks at Ed's Pet World, Seth and Angie, the entire crew. They do wonderful work. They've been in business for 50 years down there in Homewood. Exotic pets, every exotic pet, everything from chinchillas to rabbits. They've got everything. Caiman, alligators, tarantulas, the whole nine yards. Fish are wonderful. They get great fish down there. And, of course, Seth also serves himself up some serious vintage toys. If you're looking for great toy collections, and that's a big thing now, he goes all over the country looking for the best in vintage toys, Star Wars, watches, the whole nine yards. Check out Ed's Pet World. Dr. Rab, as always, man, greatly appreciate you. Thank you so much.
Yeah, man. Talk to you next time.
This has been a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.